Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, Text 23, because today is Ramchandra Vijayotsava. It is the day where Lord Ram defeated Ravana, so we have made a temporary jump to Canto 9. The chapter is called The Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, and it's Text 23. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Devam, Shipam, Danushi, Sanditam, Utsasarja, Banam, Sa, Vachram, Iva, Chatritayam, Bibeda, So, Shrik, Vaman, Dasamukhair, Nyapatat, Vimanat, Taheti, Jalpati, Jane, Sukriteva, Viktaha, Evam Sipam Danusi Sandita Mutsa Sarja, Banam Savachram Ivatata Tritayam Bipeda. So Srikva Manda Samukarinya Patat Vimanat. Ta Heti Jalpati Jane Sukriti Varigdaha. Evam Sipandanu Sisandita Mutsa Sarja. Panam Savajram Ivatatritayam Bipeda. Susrikva Manda Samukarinya Patat Vimanat. Daheti Jalpati Jane Sukriti Varigdaha. Evam Sipandanu Sisandita Mutsa Sarja. Banam Savajram Ivatatritayam Bipeda. Susrikva Manda Samukarnya Patat Vimanad. Tahe chichalpa chichane sukriti variktaha. Evam shipandanu sisanditam utsasarja. Panam savacham ivatatritayam bibeda. Susritva manda samukaranya patat vimanad. Taheti jalpati jane sukriti variktaha. Evam Sipandanu Sisandita Mutsa Sarja. Panam Savachram Ivatatritayam Bipena. Susritva Manda Samukarnya Patat Vimana. Tahe chichalpati jane sukriti vavritaha. Davies. Evam Chipanda Nusi Sandita Mutsa Sarja. Panam Savajram Ivatatar Dayam Bipeda. So Sripvamanda Samukarnya Patat Imana. Tahe Chijalpa Chichane Sukrita Varitaha. Evam. In this way. Shipam. Chastising. Ravana. Danushi, on the bow. Sanditam, fixed an arrow. Utsasarja, released towards him. Banam, the arrow. Saha, that arrow. Vajram iva, like a thunderbolt. Chatritayam, the heart of Ravana. Bibeda, pierced. Saha, he. Ravana, oh sorry. Saha, he, Ravana. Asrik, blood. Vaman, vomiting. Dasamukhaya, through the 10 mouths. Nyapatat, fell down. Vimanat, from his airplane. Haha, alas, what happened? Iti, thus. Jalpati, roaring. Jane, when all the people present there. Sukriti Iva, like a pious man. Uriktaha, when the result of his pious activities are finished. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada Ki. After thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramchandra fixed an arrow to his bow, aimed at Ravana, and released the arrow, which pierced Ravana's heart like a thunderbolt. Upon seeing this, Ravana's followers raised a tumultuous sound, crying, "Alas, alas, what has happened? What has happened?" As Ravana, vomiting blood from his 10 mouths, fell from his airplane, just as a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets when the results of his pious activities are exhausted. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 9.21, it is said, "Sine punye macha lokam visanti." When the result of their pious activities are exhausted, those who have enjoyed in the heavenly planets fall again to earth. The fruitive activities of this material world are such that whether one acts piously or impiously, one must remain within the material world according to different conditions. For neither pious nor impious actions can relieve one from Maya's clutches of repeated birth and death. Somehow or other, Ravana was raised to an exalted position as the king of a great kingdom with all material opulences, but because of his sinful act of kidnapping Mother Sita, all the result of his pious activities were destroyed. If one offends an exalted personality, especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly becomes most abominable, bereft of the results of pious activities, one must fall down like Ravana and other demons. It is therefore advised that one transcend both pious and impious activities and remain in the pure state of freedom from all designations. Sarvapadivi nirmuktam tatparadvina nirmalam. When one is fixed in devotional service, he is above the material platform. On the material platform, there are higher and lower positions. But when one is above the material platform, he is always fixed in a spiritual position. Sagunan samatichaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Ravana or those like him may be very powerful and opulent in this material world, but theirs is not a secure position. Because after all, they are bound by the results of their karma, karmana daiva nitrena. We should not forget that we are completely dependent on the laws of nature. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankara viburatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. Bhagavad Gita 3:27. One should not be proud of one's exalted position and act like Ravana, thinking oneself independent of material nature's laws. Om Ajnana Chimiranda Shajanandana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilisamdina Chashmai Shri Kurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So here it's brought out that it doesn't end well for Ravana, and he is compared to a pious man. Just as a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets when the result of his pious activities are exhausted. So it's the same thing, right? Ravana, greatest demon on the planet, and then you have some pious person on the heavenly planets. It's the same thing. It's still within the material world, within the world of ahankara, means false ego. So that's basically the only choice we have to make, is false ego, real ego. We like to make distinctions that, you know, piety is good and impiety is bad. You know, you got the pious and the heavenly creatures, and then you got stinky, smelly demons, and then we have to try and become like pious. But here the point is made that no, that's actually not really, that's not the point. Because if you're not connecting it to Krishna by surrendering to Krishna, it doesn't matter. Piety in itself is sinful. Because why is something considered pious? It's considered pious because that's what Krishna likes. Krishna as a person, that's what he likes. Right? So if you're just going by pious because it works, then where is Krishna in that? Then it's just, you know, I get good results. I like that. You know, it's mode of goodness. Okay. If you connect it to Krishna, then it works out better. But if you don't, it's still just sinful, basically. It's still selfish. And it's tricky because it looks real good. And you don't generally get a lot of trouble from the material energy if you're very pious, because you're actually going by the laws that govern the material nature. So you'll have a pretty nice life with some good results, but you'll still be stuck here. So this is high grade nice demon, right? This is this pious. We're used to technically subhuman demon, you know, not following one ashram, not following shastra generally, and not acknowledging any higher authority. You know, the universe doesn't have a need for God. This is said by Tony Blair, who was Prime Minister of England. The ruler of England said the universe doesn't have a need for God. So that's like saying that the car I drive doesn't have the need for a factory, right? Or the book I'm reading doesn't have the need for an author. It's not a matter of does it need or not. It's a matter of is there an author or not? Is there a God or not? I mean, so it's not really very intelligent what I'm used to from where I'm coming. So here we see higher grade demon. You know, I mean, when we see, you know, criminal, that's demon, criminal, right? So when we think criminal, usually we think baggy pants, you know, cap on backwards and, you know, rough. But actually the real criminals, they're wearing the suits. They're the ones who are actually following the laws, but for the wrong intention, right? We say that's mode of passion. Mode of ignorance, that's just wrong activity, wrong mentality. Nothing works out. You're convinced that the world is upside down, or rather than it's not upside down when actually it is, and you're just not getting the results, and it's everybody else's fault. That's the general, the mode of ignorance, right? mode of passion is you're getting the results, but it's for the wrong reasons. It's for me. It's my result. That's what we're seeing here in the purport is being said. The fruitive activities of this material world are such that whether one act piously or impiously, one must remain within the material world according to different conditions. For neither pious nor impious actions can relieve one from Maya's clutches of repeated birth and death. So you're getting the results you want, but you're staying here. It's not that, I mean, it's nicer in a way. You're not being harassed as much from the material energy as if you're in ignorance. But ultimately, you're still bound. You know, so where we're coming from, the idea is that if I go against my nature, that means I'm free. I can do whatever I want. This is a free country, you know, so we go against our nature. So we have rich people acting like without any sort of social standing or rough or something. We have men acting like women, women acting like men. So if you can go against what your position actually is, that means you're free, because we can do whatever we want, and then conveniently forgetting that it's not actually working out very well. If we look at it, it's not actually working out, you know. So higher than that is the more pious materialist. We can also call it a theistic moralist. So it's extended sense gratification, that where we acknowledge we have to follow the rules, because then we can all exploit peacefully. It works out better, but ultimately, like the pious man here is described, that at some point the pious credits run out, and again you go down. And then you have someone like Ravana, that scripture is actually written about him. You know, he is high grade demon, very pious actually. You know, when there's this lila where he's doing a fire sacrifice, and he's doing it so pucker, you know, he's got, you know, I mean, 10 heads chanting the mantras in unison, that's pretty good, and all the mudras are there, and it's all going on to the degree where Agni personified goes down and checks out this yagya, and he even brings his wife, and the other demigods are saying, don't bring your wife, but yeah, she's got to see this is high grade, you know. And they come down and they take part, and as Ravana is making the offering, Agni is very nicely enjoying and reaching his arms out and accepting the offering, and at that exact point Ravana makes off with Agni's wife. So then it dawns on me, that was the problem. So this is how the real demon gets to these positions, is by piety. You know, it's by piety. He does it so well that he actually gets within this material sphere, he gets results that are just way beyond anything we can kind of comprehend. So it's because the mentality is wrong. There is an attachment to the facility as something valuable. Like pious is nice, it's peaceful, it's all good, and impious is uncomfortable and stuff like that. So we're forgetting Krishna. You know, we're thinking that the pious situation is beneficial in itself. It's not. It's only in relation to Krishna's, because all values emanate from Krishna. So all that we're experiencing of the niceness, of the peacefulness and all that, it's coming from Krishna. But we're forgetting the source of it, so we're just taking it as something for ourselves. So that is what generates this problem. So we have different degrees of this misconception. It's all within ahankara, all within the false ego, and thus also within the three modes of material nature. But you have those who are religious after, I mean, they're seeing God as what's the Prabhupada uses the word, as an order supplier. Yeah, you know, there is this prayer, God give us today our daily bread. And Prabhupada was in one class saying, this is not love of God, this is love of bread. Right, so I love you because you can give me. So this is actually not God consciousness, it's just the acknowledgement that I'm not in control. It's not total ignorance, but it's not actually God consciousness. It's not God is a tool in my life to satisfy myself. We also know this as karma mimamsa philosophy, that God is just a tool in my attempt to satisfy myself. So they describe as God is also under the laws of material nature. If I do the sacrifice, God will have to comply. Whereas Vedanta, of course, acknowledges God as the supreme controller and cause of all causes, so therefore he doesn't have to do anything. If he's pleased, then he will reciprocate. So then Krishna says, as you surrender, I reward you accordingly. So if we surrender to the rules, we're working with the rules. This is karma. This is what karma mimamsa, you know, we do the work, we get the result. But if we surrender to Krishna as a person, he reciprocates as a person. So then we're dealing with a relationship, and the rules are there because we want to deal properly with the relationship. There are much more rules here than on, say, the heavenly planets, because they're not generating karma. We're generating karma, so we have a responsibility to that person we're interacting with. If you do really nice, pious work, you go to the heavenly planets, you enjoy, and then when that is exhausted, like it says here, that's exhausted, you fall back down. So that's not, you know, it doesn't need a lot of rules, it's just enjoy and then party's over. Animal life and the lower existences, you're burning off karma, you're burning off bad karma. Again, you don't really need rules, it's not like dog society, there's not a lot of philosophy going on. They bark at each other and then they make up and then that's it. And then after some time the pain's over and they're on their way up. So this is just how it goes round and round. Piety, if not connected to Krishna, generates a mentality of I'm very qualified. We're not very qualified, so then it switches and we go down again. Then we realize, wait a minute, I'm not very qualified, and it switches again and it starts going up because we're humble, and then we come puffed up again. And that can go on forever. If we want to get out, we have to connect it to Krishna. Right, so Ravana is not exactly doing that. He has this, I mean, we're talking high-grade false ego here. He is completely convinced that he is actually the supreme controller. He is in control here. And even as the battle is going on and the army is being eradicated, he still thinks. However, and this is where we see the demonic mentality becoming kind of hypocritical, because we see he seeks out help. He goes to the Sutala planet and tries to get some help from Bali Maharaj, because he thinks, oh, that's a fellow demon, you know, he must understand my predicament, and then we'll work it out together and we'll be victorious. And as he goes there, he's first met with Vamanadeva, who's kind of protecting the planet, and tries some mystic cities to get past, you know. First he just wants to get in, but Vamanadeva stops him with the club and not getting in. So then he tries different things, you know, invisibility and becoming smaller than the smallest. But this is all mundane stuff. It doesn't really work with Vishnu. So when he becomes small, Vamanadeva puts his foot on Ravana and stops him there. And actually it's described here, this is at this point he becomes eligible to be killed by Ram's arrow, because now there is some kind of Vishnu Sambandha. He actually realizes, I'm not the supreme controller because I'm not getting through here. That doesn't discourage him though, and Vamana lets him through for the Leela's sake. And he comes to Bali Maharaj and says, let's talk, you know. And Bali Maharaj listens and says, you know what, I'm going to help you, I'm going to make this easy for you. You just give Sita back and all your problems will be over. And he's like, no, that's no way I'm doing that. You know, I'm a demon. Demons steal other people's wives. What's the problem? That's what I'm doing, you know. So I'm just following my dharma. And And Bali Maharaj says, no, but so what you're saying that you'll beat Ram. Yes, of course I'll beat Ram, but you're coming to me from, I mean, you're saying you're the supreme controller and you're coming to me for help, so that must mean I must be the supreme controller, because you need help from me. So Ravana gets really upset and starts complaining that you're my senior, you're supposed to be nice to me, what are you doing here? And this is another thing, you know, so Bali Maharaj, it makes a little fun with him, like now you're quoting Dharma Shastra. You know, because what is actually happening is he's quoting Dharma Shastra in order to get things the way he wants it. That's the flip between the devotee and the demon, if we just cut it black and white. The devotee aligns his wishes with Dharma. He uses Nietzsche and Artha in support of Dharma, because Dharma is the higher principle. Now, the materialist, or demon if you will, he will flip that around. He will quote Dharma to get his Artha or his Niti. So this is happening all over in material life, that we will quote Dharma if it supports what we think. If it doesn't support what we think, we will conveniently leave it to one side. So this is what Ravana is doing here. He's not satisfied with the approach of Bali Maharaj, who's actually acting quite nicely, smiling and laughing and listening and trying to explain to him this is not going to work. But Ravana, he then employs Dharma as a means to get around this. And the story is that Bali Maharaj says, okay, I'm going to show you. So he takes him to an open square that's described as 4 ayojanas in diameter, or on each side or something. That's 32 miles. And there is like a mountain of gold, and Ravana, he's like, and thinks like, okay, forget about Ram and Sita, I'll just take this and go and enjoy, because that's, you know, the demonic mentality is always whimsical, I can enjoy this, I can enjoy that. And so then Bali Maharaj, he explains to him, this is the earring of Hiranyakashipu. This, you in your previous life were Hiranyakashipu, and you were fighting with Nrsingadev. This is the earring you wore when you got your behind kicked by Lord Nrsingadev. Now, you can't lift this, and you're going to tell me that you're going to beat the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ram, who's non-different from Lord Nrsingadev? Of course, Ravana is not having this, so he splits, goes back to the battlefield. Of course, the battle can only go one way, and his army is defeated, and Lord Ram is even merciful to him and says, look, we're going to go now, we're going to meet up tomorrow, and you're going to give me Sita back, and everything will be wonderful, it's going to be great, no problem, you know, just give me Sita back and it'll be great. And Ravana is angry like fire. Not only is he being beaten, he's not victorious, also he's not even being killed, means that Lord Ram is not even scared of him, and he's still on this point with giving Sita back. So now he goes to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva told Ravana that if your life is in danger, I will help you. So now this is the last resort, right? Lord Shiva, you don't get much closer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of position than Lord Shiva. We explain him as actually non-different from Vishnu. He's in his own tattva. So it's just barely touching on actually Vishnu or Krishna. So he goes to him and says, look, this is bad, you know, I need your help, you told me you'd help me, so please go and deal with this Lord Ram fella. And Lord Shiva says, look, I told you I'd help you, I didn't tell you I would go fight. So this is me helping you, this is me saving your life. Just give Sita back. Not this again, you know. So he goes back to the battlefield, he approaches Ram, and as we can see here, Ram puts an arrow on his bow and kills Ravana. Now, it's important to note here that Ravana, he surrenders actually to, not surrenders, but he seeks the help of anyone but Vishnu. anyone but Krishna, anyone but Lord Ram, he will approach. Everybody has told him. Hanuman was there before he burned up Lanka. He told him, just give Sita back. Vibhishan, his own brother, told him, this is not going to work. Give Sita back. You know? So we're getting closer and closer, and it's always the same point. Give Sita back. And he's not going to do that. This is the key of the demoniac mentality. Is that it's not about, it's not that they, I mean, you know, we hear that criminals, they rob a bank. You know, that's a serious criminal. Or they money transport or whatever. This is Lakshmi personified. He's robbing, you know. It is all wealth, the concept of wealth he's taking. So the point is, the philosophical point is that it's never enough. You get a criminal who's a bank robber. If he's successful, he will rob a bank again. Preferably a bigger bank so you can get more. It never ends. It's like putting fuel on a fire. This idea that there's something in the material world that's mine, that's not connected with anything else, ultimately Krishna. That is the demoniac mentality if you really break it down. And that never ends. It never gets satisfied. So here Ravana, he's been doing good in terms of piety for a long time, because how else do you become like a big king with all these personalities following you other than piety? Because impiety just doesn't work. So he's been very pious, but it's with the wrong mentality. So he's reached the point where he's actually stolen Sita. And as we see again, it doesn't work. We see that it's not a big struggle when Ram finally decides, okay, he's not going to come around. He just strings the bow and kills him. That's it. It's like in the Krishna book when Krishna kills the demons. It's not a big deal. It's just, okay, he kills them, you know. Because it's not like a thriller. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These things, he doesn't even need to come himself and do it. You know, Maya can take care of that. The material nature can take care of that. All these demons are jivas. They're under the laws of material nature. So the material nature in itself can take care, and usually it does. But when they're this great, the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes for Leela. He comes for the devotees. So the devotees will not be anxious about the material energy. The Lord comes and shows, look, it's going to be fine. It's all right. These great demons, they cannot do anything. So it's for the Leela. That is everything that the Lord does is for the Leela. Maintaining the universe is not a big deal with a spark of his splendor, you know. So that's just like what we do. That's just like the job. But this is the real value, the interaction with the devotees. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chatuskritam. It says to deliver the devotees and to annihilate the miscreants. But to deliver the devotees, that's the primary. So how do we do that? We do that by getting rid of all the bad guys, you know. So then there is some story, some leela there. So in this way, that should be our focus. As we purify ourselves, as we become Krishna consciousness, we also start to realize that this material nature with all its forms is not important in itself. It's only important in its connection with Krishna. It is the medium by which we connect with Krishna, right? So if we use it like that, then everything works out nicely. If we use it the way it's supposed to be used, still it won't work out, because we're not going to get to the final destination. It's still material and it's still temporary. So we have this idea that you know, we're devotees. We can do anything we want, right? I mean, we're not Varnashramas, so we're devotees, but yeah, you're not the body, Prabhu. No, but the body is the body. So I may not be the body, so I have to deal properly. So otherwise it's not going to work. So like, I'm not my dhoti, so I'll use it as a parachute. Right? I'll hire a helicopter, I'll fly over Mayapur, I'll jump out, and I'll glide down to Mayapur, and the devotees will be all like, hey, look at him, you know. He's using his dhoti as a parachute, you know. So yeah, he's not the dhoti, you know. Oh, he must be really self-realized. That's not how it works. The dhoti is the dhoti, so I use it to cover myself. So when I sit here in front of you, it'll look better, you know. If I come in a kolpin, maybe you won't appreciate so much. So it's better I use it. So this is how it works. We use the things for what they're meant to be used for. So then Krishna is happy, because that's how the Leela goes. Paraphernalia is part of Krishna. It's not different from Krishna. So we use it like that. You know, I mean, you could take the fan and put it on fire, and then, hey, we're offering fire to Krishna. It just works better with the ghee lamp. So the problem is we get attached to the forms. We get attached to, I want to do that. And that's fine, because we're all contaminated. We're all in the material world. And if Krishna is just there, then that's fine. It's purifying. But it's still not perfect. Perfect is that whatever is there at my disposal, I will use that to serve Krishna. It doesn't matter what it is. If we see the army, the monkey army here, they're going full force towards the Rakshasas, and they're using anything like tops of mountains and trees and everything. They're just hurling it at these demons, because it's just what's there. And they're successful. Why? Because they are serving Lord Ram. So in this way, everything works out if we just use whatever's there. That's also in Bhagavad Gita, this is the difference between Arjuna in the beginning and Arjuna in the end. He's still a Kshatriya, but in the beginning he's like, what am I getting out of this? You know, I'm fighting my own family members. It's not nice, you know, it's not pious. And Krishna's saying, you're a fool. I'm right here, I'm telling you. You know, we're in a relationship. This is me directly speaking. And you're telling me about piety? So in the end, he's doing it for Krishna. He's still a Kshatriya. So he's still using his Kshatriya nature. It's not like he's going to the forest. Krishna says, you're a fool. You're not going to go to the forest because you're a Kshatriya. You're in that situation. But now it's just a medium. He's using that for Krishna. It's not that he prefers Kshatriya or Brahmana or Shudra or man, woman or anything. That doesn't matter. It's just, this is what's available. So I use that. That is the highest platform, you know. That is pure devotional service on the highest platform. As a last point on this Ram Leela is that actually Ravana never actually captured Sita Devi. It's explained. It's explained in Kurma Purana, I believe, that that when Sita exits the house, Agni comes and actually creates an illusory Sita and takes her. And takes the real Sita, and so then the Sita that Ravana has captured for 4 months is actually just an illusion, because you don't run off with Lakshmi Devi. You just don't. It doesn't matter how pious you are, because it's beyond you. So then there's a whole Leela about getting her back, and she has to be, you know, she is put in the fire and she's pure, and at that point actually she's switched back to the real Sita. So in this way, Lord Ravana isn't even temporarily successful. So we can also realize this in a small sense, that even though we may temporarily get something that we haven't deserved, or even if we have deserved it, it's still not ours. You know, we don't have it. It's in the proximity of us, but we don't have it. So all we can do is connect everything to Krishna and serve him with whatever means we have, and then he'll be very satisfied. Because for him, it's not about the position, social position. He's not really impressed by social position. He's not really impressed by, I mean, opulence, material opulence. He's impressed with the mood of service. So you see, here, when Ravana is defeated, Ram and Sita is brought back to him. He says, oh, fine, thank you, you can go now to Sita. And Hanuman freaks out, and he's like, I jumped an ocean, make a bridge, kill the demons, and now you can go wherever you want. I don't think so. We did all this for her, and now you're gonna keep her. You know, that's how it works. Because he's attached to the situation. He's attached to the not the facility, because it's all for Ram, but he's still attached to a proper way of doing it. It's pure devotional. There's not, it's perfect, but it's not most perfect. Most perfect is Raj, where they don't care about the facility at all or the situation at all. It's more opulent than Vaikuntha, but they don't care. They don't even care that Krishna's God. It's only about the relationship. It's only about that sweetness between the devotee and Krishna, and not the majesty or the opulence or anything like that. So that's why that is the highest. So I think we're approaching time. So I think I'll just finally, lastly, say a little bit about Madhvacharya, because it's his most glorious appearance day today, and he's, you could say, a subhead of our sampradaya. So Madhvacharya was he took his birth in Udupi in the 1300s and was self-realized, took initiation at 5, sannyas at 12. That's pretty good. You don't generally see that. So he was extremely scholarly, and he fought Mayavadism, which was quite popular at that time, by presenting his Sudadvaita philosophy, purified duality, you can call it. So usually we know that duality is on the material plane, and then the Mayavadis are very intelligently, you could say, on one level, saying that, okay, the negation of that must be spiritual. So that means that everything is Brahman, it's non-different, there are no qualities, and I will merge with that, and then finally I will be God. So in a sense, that's even worse than Ravana, because at least Ravana, he acknowledges the existence of God. He just wants to take that place. Whereas the Mayavadis, they don't even acknowledge. They're using the words of the Vedas and the same methods, but they don't even acknowledge the existence. So there's no relationship. And then finally, they want to merge with God. So Madhvacharya, he brought out this that no, it's not all one. It's just that it's variety rather than good and bad. So there's variety within the spiritual. There is God, and then there's me. That is purified duality. So it's not that we merge with God. Actually, there is a clear distinction. And he preached this profusely and was very successful. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually accepted initiation into the Madhva Sampradaya. So we are known as the Gaudiya Madhva Sampradaya. So in that sense, we are also in line with Madhvacharya. So that's very nice. I thought I'd just mention that briefly. So do we have any questions? Yes, there's a microphone coming.
Thank you very much for class, Prabhu. I was noticing when you were discussing when Ravana would go from person to person, all of these persons that he would ask for advice or help, they're all devotees. So I was wondering, maybe you could speak on, he was getting so much association with devotees, but he wasn't, it didn't seem like he was benefiting. So maybe you can speak on how we can miss out on associating with devotees, and how do we properly associate with devotees?
Well, that again, thank you for that question. Again, this is where the piety comes in. As a proper way of using piety is etiquette. There's a certain way of approaching devotees. The first chapter of the first canto of Bhagavatam actually deals with this proper mood of hearing submissively, you know, that you should inquire submissively from the devotees and serve them. He who is my servant is not my servant, but the servant of my servant, he's my servant, you know. So so we are, if we look at it that there is me and then there's everything else, that is the topmost material demonic platform. Then it is impossible actually to make any real progress unless you get very gross results, right? This is why Ravana was not successful. Then you flip it, there's God, and then there's me, and then there's everything else. So then God comes in. It's still a problem because the creation of God is just his expansion. Whenever God is present, he's present with all his expansions. So if you put yourself before the expansion, then that is not a proper position. So then you see that God is the subject, I'm the object, and then everything else is instruments for my service to God. The proper way of seeing it is that there's God, his creation, including all the devotees, the paraphernalia, form, pastimes, all that. And then there's me. Sometimes there's 50 feet of dirt, and then there's me. And I'm the instrument. So my job is to make others Krishna conscious. is not to make myself Krishna conscious first. I mean, that's ultimately, it's a side point, you could say. But if you're putting yourself in a mentality where you're serving others so that they may become Krishna conscious, then that is the highest platform. You know, that is where you're really getting the mercy. So that is why we are a preaching mission. So this is the proper position to put ourselves in. Does that somehow answer your question? We lost the mic. He was using others as instruments in his own scheme, yes. He was thinking that it's my lila, you know. This is all about me. I'm the center. So then everything, including Lord Ram, becomes instruments in his own, whatever he wants. So then there's not, it's very difficult to make any kind of progress there, because as soon as someone says something that is not exactly what you want to hear, you know, you're just going to either ignore it or attack it, basically. So we're all very, very small Ravanas. We all have this mentality in us. Ravanas used as the example because they always use the most far-out examples, because that includes everything. You know, you don't get worse than Ravana and Hiranyakashipu and these personalities. So that pretty much covers everyone. But we should then not... it would be a fault to then say, okay, I'm not like that. You know, the mode of ignorance would be not to actually understand that there is a point to this, just the story. The mode of passion would be, okay, that's Ravana, I'm not like that, good thing I'm not like that. But actually the mode of goodness would be to acknowledge, actually, I'm like that. I'm not that bad, but I'm like that in certain areas. So this is something I should be careful of when it pops up. So in this way, that's why we're using these stories. It's not that they're not true, they're true. Like on a mundane level, you know, you have what's called the Stockholm Syndrome. It's when someone kidnaps someone and they then end up, the kidnapped person ends up sympathizing with their kidnappers. It's called the Stockholm Syndrome because in Stockholm in the 70s, that happened. Someone took some people hostage in a bank and they were there for a couple of days, and finally the hostages were siding with the kidnapper rather than the police that were trying to save them. So it's a symbolic story. We know it as the Stockholm Syndrome, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. That's what we usually, oh, it's just mythology. No, it's real. But we use these stories because they tell us something about our way of reacting, you know, so they're universal at the same time. So in that way, we use these stories to make sure that we don't do that, what Ravana is doing here. So, is that okay? Thank you. Yes, Mataji. Don't hate the person, don't hate the sinner, hate the sinner. Yeah, that's you, yeah. Yes. Yes, so when we're preaching in the mundane material world, of which we are a part ourselves, how do we deal with this Ravana inside? Do we call them demons and then hope that they'll better themselves? No, we don't. Usually what I do and what I, by my experience, is the most effective is that you talk to whatever is good in them. Then you bring that out. So then that, because that's inspiring, you talk to whatever is working, and then you just neglect whatever is not working. If they start saying something that is very offensive or something, I just pretend it didn't come out of their mouth and just keep talking on the good, and then automatically the bad kind of subsides. So that's what I'm fanning the spark. Whatever is there, that there's a common ground, that's what I work with. So then in some cases, there was one case this summer in Norway, I was sitting on the street and talking with people, and there was one atheist. And at this point, he was very atheistic. At this point, I had around 20 onlookers. They were just interested. What's going on here? You got a monk and you got a physics professor, and they're discussing, you know. So at that point, it didn't become about him anymore. So at that point, I pointed out, no, this is actually wrong what you're saying, because of this and because of that, and you know, materialism is not that difficult for a devotee to tear apart. So I did that because now it was more important with the 19 other people than with him and his false ego. So then you can sometimes do, but then I made sure that afterwards I gave him a cookie, because that's the thing with materialists who think that they're jnanis, they're actually karmis. They're just using jnana as a means. So don't, with a jnani, don't talk to them about jnana because they have the false ego there. Talk to them on the karma level. Just give them cookies, say something nice, you know. They feel very comfortable and they will appreciate you. So that's the main principle, is always leave anyone with a good impression as far as possible. But since this guy in this particular case was talking some nonsense to like 19, 20, how many different other people, I just had to stop that for their sake. But usually if it was just him and me, I would just ignore it. Whatever he was saying, oh, there's no, like we were saying in the beginning, there's no need for God. I wouldn't even get into that. I would just say, no, but we, you know, meditation and karma and all these things, you know, we guru, you know, financial guru, all these words are being used in mundane society. So there's always some yoga. Everybody likes yoga, you know, so you just take that and you just work on that, because then that will grow. If you point out the faults, then that will grow, because then we're talking about that. That will be the experience of the conversation. So then when he's come to the temple 8 times, he started chanting 4 rounds a day, and he says, I want to surrender. Then you point out, okay, then you have to get rid of this, 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 and this. Because then he's accepting it, and he's actually making that decision that now I have something I have to work with, you know. So then we can get started, but never point out faults, you know, because it just turns people off, even devotee to devotee, you know. Just talk about what works. And then if someone asks you, then you can be in the position to point out. Is that okay? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Anyone else? Prasadam ki? Randaraj Shuma Bhagavatam ki? Ram Chandra Vijayotsava ki? Srila Prabhupada ki? Hare Krishna.